Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, and welcome to My Time Capsule. My name's Mike Fenton Stevens, and My Time Capsule, as it's always been, is the podcast where people tell me five things from their life they wish they had in a time capsule. They pick four things that they cherish and one thing that they'd like to forget. My guest in this episode is the stand-up comedian Sam Lake. Of course, Sam is not only a stand-up comedian, he's also a writer and presenter. And he openly shares stories and details from his life, which has involved him moving from a small mining village in Cornwall to a big city and becoming a happily married man. Sam has racked up a number of achievements, including winning Leicester Square's Theatre New Comedian of the Year and Hastings Fringe Newcomer of the Year. And as well as this, Sam has recently starred in Dave's The Comedy Guide to Life and All Four's The Joy of Missing Out with Tom Allen. His writing has been featured on Mock the Week, Breaking the News, and Newsjack. He's also the host of the podcast I've Had a Rosé, Let's Talk About Feelings, and regularly performs at the biggest clubs up and down the country. In fact, his last show, Aspiring Dilf, was one of the best-reviewed shows at last year's Edinburgh Fringe, and he's preparing his latest, Esmeralda, for this year's Fringe, with, of course, before it, some dates around the country. There's a link in the usual place. But if that introduction hasn't inspired you to book, then I think our chat may do. So, here is the very charming and rather lovely Sam Lake.
Hello.
Hello, Sam.
Hi, nice to meet you.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, very nice.
Good.
It's my day off, and so I can be very relaxed and chat.
Oh, that's nice. I like that doing a podcast doesn't sound like work to you, that you find it like a joy.
Yeah, I do, actually.
That's a really good thing.
Well, when would we have met? You know, I might have come and seen you in a show or something and thought, he's funny. Then coming to you in the bar afterwards.
Yes.
I did that once. And somebody said to me, oh, how lovely of you, how sweet and everything. And, well, what are you doing? You want a drink? And he said to me, and, sorry, are you straight? And I said, I am, yes. And he said, yes, it seems the only thing that's fucked in this room is my gaydar.
Well, good. I can just tick off the answer to one of the questions I had for you then, but
oh,
that's
okay,
fine.
Then. My wife says that I am gay, which is, so that's always nice, I think.
Maybe you just present gay, and what's wrong with that? You're a straight gay man.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we need more of those, I think.
I think you're right. I think the world certainly does. I know. I've spent my entire life touring in shows and going to places, and I've always said to everybody, particularly young men in companies, if you're in a company and they say, where should we go out? And I say, let's go to a gay disco.
Why not? Why not?
I've always felt that they're the safer places to go. I mean, straight discos, I don't know why there is this differentiation, but really, because it's just people dancing.
Yes.
It's weird, isn't it?
Well, I think...
Better music,
yeah.
Really?
I think at a straight disco, you also have to put up with the fact that they're probably in a straighter venue as well, which means it's stickier.
Mm-hmm.
The drinks aren't as good, no. I find, as well.
Just lager beers.
I remember going... My first gay bar was the one I went to when I went to uni, and it was really small. It was a tiny little thing, but you got all the 30 gay people who lived in the town in there at the same time. And it was a lovely time. And they had every cocktail imaginable, little colorful shots and stuff.
Yes.
And you just had a lovely time and cheap as well. Cheap.
Yeah.
I'm
in a show in London at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm in Wicked.
Amazing.
So it is amazing, but as you can imagine, there's not a single gay person in it. Not one.
It just makes the production better. I just trust the gays and lesbians to get the job done.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And much more fun backstage, I have to say. It's very lively. It's brilliant. It's lovely. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for doing this.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And you've just finished a tour, though, haven't you?
I have, yes. Yeah. I just finished it just the other week. Just had the final run at Soho Theatre, which was lovely. But I've sort of taken it to a few places up and down the country. I got to do a few dates up here in Scotland. Did some in Manchester, Brighton, Bristol. I got to go to some place I've never been to before. Mm. So it was a really lovely experience. And what was nice was that some people came to see the show like in different locations. One person, I think, saw it three times, once in Edinburgh, once in Manchester, to the point where I felt bad that I was just like, I hope you know it's the same show every time, in case you thought I was making it up. And some people have like made little gifts and merch. So one person, a lovely guy called Sam, not me, I didn't make it for myself. they made me a little tote bag that has the name of my show on it.
Oh, lovely.
And it's so cool. I just love that. I don't know if when you get into this kind of stuff that you ever think you'll get to a point where somebody enjoys your work so much, they'd be like, hey, I made you this thing to show how much I enjoyed it. And it does just warm the cockles of your heart.
This is extraordinary, isn't it? I always forget that people are watching something and may well be madly in love with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing this show in London, you come out every night and there are people and you're asking you to sign a program or something that they've had for years. They've seen the show a load of times.
Yeah.
And that you'll get that, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I always take it as a surprise when, like, if I turn up for a show and the show sold well, or if somebody makes me something nice, and I sort of go like, there must be, are they here for me? I still do that, even though I've been doing this for, I think, 9 years now. Mm. It still baffles me that people are happy to come to a show where it's just me and me alone. And I sort of hope that never goes away, because I'd never want to get to a point where I'm not grateful for that. But it still just makes it, even if there's only like a few people in the room, I'll be like, I can't believe that you paid money to see me. This is, are you sure? You can go if you want. Don't worry.
Well, that's lovely. You know, you can say that to the whole of... Thank you, Wembley. I had no idea you were all going to turn up.
I didn't even know this was happening today. What are you doing here?
I'm so surprised. I just happened to be wandering by and saw my name on the door. That's the way. Yeah. Well, it's a good attitude to have. But as you say, 9 years, that's a lot of work you've put into something. And it's lovely that actually you've got to the point now where... It's almost a tipping point, isn't there? Where, in fact, you suddenly go... Oh, hang on a minute. I think I might be getting to a point where I'm established.
Well, yes. And I think people have different gauges for when that point is.
Mm.
And do you know what? I'll be honest and say I don't know if I've hit whatever point that might be for me. But I think I have definitely learned to take each like nice thing that happens and just enjoy it for what it is. Because I talk about this a lot, actually, with a lot of like my comedy peers. As I'm sure you'll understand, being in like any kind of entertainment related industry is really easy to look at like what other people are doing and then compare yourself to that. And so sometimes it's hard to not go like, why aren't I doing that? Mm-hmm. But then it sort of makes you overlook all of the stuff that you have achieved for yourself. Like, I never thought I would get to the point where I'd get to do like a national tour, or, you know, even do like The Fringe or some of the other stuff that I've done. I sometimes do have to have a moment and go like, do you know what? Like, I'm actually doing quite well.
Yeah. Well, as you say, that thing of now you're doing a show on your own.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, sometimes I'll just stop. I'll literally just be walking down the street and I'll stop and I'll have a moment and go like, I'm doing okay, actually. And it sort of silences all of the other sort of, I think, like, naturally sort of jealous voices that I think everyone gets. Mm-hmm. But I think the trick is to sort of be able to manage those voices and not let it, like, affect your own ego. Because then you end up as one of those sort of, like, sad comedy men who's always complaining that they're not doing more.
Those things will never happen, I think. If that's the way you look at it, those things will never happen. Because
exactly.
Fact, you'll be so annoyed that they haven't, that nobody's ever going to give you the job.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who wants to work with that bitter bastard? And I've spoken to a lot of stand-up comedians on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it, I'm taken aback by this. I've been doing it for 4 years now.
Yeah, you've done a lot of episodes as well.
A lot of episodes.
Yeah.
Which means I must enjoy it. I do enjoy it because I've spoken to stand-up comedians of all sorts at different points in their career. So I've spoken to people who've done stadium, you know.
Yeah.
Is it stadium or stadia? Who knows?
If you're looking for guidance on Latin plurals, wrong person. Wrong person.
Okay, I'll remember that when we talk later.
Stadiumuses, I think it is.
Stadiumess, yes. Anyway, those people and people who are just doing their first solo show.
It's
very interesting that quite often the people you talk to who have achieved what people may think is as far as you can go almost, those people, when you ask them what is the thing that you really love about it, that they will often talk about those early shows. They will talk about performing with other performers and talking backstage.
Yeah.
And I think that's a thing to treasure.
It absolutely is. And it's so much like the experience of it. And sometimes when you start comedy, there's always this like novelty to it of like, oh, I'm doing a stand-up show tonight. Mm. Like I'm going to an open mic and I'm doing a stand-up gig. And like, if I were doing that level of gig now, I'd probably be quite upset. Mm. But back then, that's where you get all of these sort of like really formative experiences. And, you know, some of my friends that I did those shows with, we still like talk about, oh, do you remember that gig where that guy did a weird like synth cover of a Freddie Mercury song that was actually quite offensive when we look back on it? Do you remember doing that gig in Arsenal where it looked like it was the set from This Is England and we all felt quite unsafe? But you look back on those, even if they were a bit rubbish at the time, you look back on them and go, oh no, I love that. Like I remember doing my first gig where it went like properly sort of like badly, like drunk people in the audience, and it was like a dinner show and people wouldn't stop talking. And I left the gig with a smile on my face because I knew like, oh, I've just had like my first absolute terrible gig. And now I've got that story. Like every comedian has a terrible gig story. And so it made me feel like a proper comic. And I still think back of it like fondly, even though if you tell the story to somebody, you'd be like, that sounds awful. And I go like, what are you talking about? It was great. I loved it.
That's a fantastic attitude to have, I think. And I think it's one that makes stand-up comedians survive. Yeah. I have the attitude as a performer that if something goes wrong, I sort of relish it.
Yeah.
Just the other night, I do a little song and dance routine in the show, and I turn at one point and say, a town of green. And on the cue green, I pull a lever and a great bank of green lights come on.
Yeah.
And I went to do it. I was so overconfident, I looked away and I missed it. My hand went through the air and nothing happened. And I then sang, of course, the next three or four lines, just laughing, giggling. I thought it was fantastic.
But that's the kind of moment people love as well. I love it when like stuff goes wrong, but you see like somebody just like roll with it, have a little giggle at themselves and then just carry on.
Yes.
It just those little moments I just love.
It's live. That's what it
is.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. So, Sam, I've asked you to think of five things you'd like to put into a time capsule from your life. So I'd be fascinated to find out where a young man from Cornwall has gone in these memories.
Yes, so young, very young.
Well,
thank you for saying that.
No, I know as part of your routine you say how old you are and how, well, I understand that in the gay world, that actually, you know, there's a great drive to remain looking young and beautiful.
there's such a focus on youth and sort of, yeah, one standard body type. But I think now as a happily married man,
yes,
I've sort of shed any sort of shackles that that's put on me. So I'm quite happy to start aging and get a bit of a tum and some man breasts. I'm very much looking forward to it.
I have two very good friends who recently got married. They got married in all the places that were important to them. So they got married, I think, something like 6 or 7 times during
the Oh, wow.
I know, all over the world. Isn't that brilliant?
To the same person or different people?
Yeah, no, same person. Yeah, they just went through the ceremony again. So they went to Australia and America and Copenhagen and Paris. And
okay, that I was just checking that that is, in fact, a lovely story and not just a confession of bigamy.
So what have you chosen, sir?
So my first thing, I sort of tried to go with things that, some things that are personal to me and then some things I think are reflective of like significant times in my life. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that I chose is something very special, and I'm quite lucky that I have two of these. The first thing I've chosen is a mug. It's a special mug. Me and my husband, when we first started dating, we were long distance. I was living in London and he was living in Edinburgh. So we were long distance for about 4 years. So we really made the most of the time that we have together. And we would travel a lot for work as well, me doing comedy, him doing his job. And everywhere that we would go, we'd get each other a little souvenir. And that souvenir would always be a mug, which I think is, it's a lovely bit. I love a bit of like holiday tat. And you can always find a little mug somewhere that maybe has the name of the place that you visited on it. And it's just like a nice little thing to say like, oh, I got you a mug, add it to the collection. And on our second anniversary, we went to where we first met, which we know exactly where it was. It's here in Edinburgh. It's in a part of Edinburgh called the Meadows. And we know the tree that we sat next to as we had our first like little chat. And we go there and we go like, oh, aren't we very much in love? And on our second anniversary, he got me a mug, which initially I was like, what a rubbish gift, because I got him a really fancy digital photo frame, which wasn't cheap. And then he was like, look on the bottom of the mug. And on the bottom of the mug, it said, will you marry me? Oh. And it took me a moment to realize I'd just been proposed to, because it was done so casually that I was just sort of like, well, yeah, no, that sounds like a great idea. But I just sort of sat there just going like, oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, I can see why marrying me would be a good idea. Yeah, I know, that's lovely. And he kept going on and being like, this is why I want to marry you. And this is what I think of you. And then I think 10 minutes later, he was just like, so if you want to say yes or no at any point, just like, fine, either way, but let me know. And I went, oh, God, no, sorry. Yes, no, obviously, yes. And I talked about this in my first show, Cake. And I showed people the mug, and there's a little joke in the show where, like, I say to everyone, hey, this is the story of how I got proposed. So you know what the story's about before I tell it. And then I get to the point where I say, you'll never guess what was written on the bottom of the mug. And then in the show, everyone's expecting it to be, will you marry me? But then I go, I looked on the bottom of the mug. You'll never believe it. It said, hashtag free Britney. And my lovely tech, Benji, who I was with every day and sort of kept me very sane at times, because it's very hard to do a fringe run, we got each other a little present to celebrate the end of the fringe run. And his gift to me was a replica of the mug that my husband got for me, but on the bottom of this one it says hashtag free Britney.
Fantastic.
So that's probably the one that I should put in the time capsule, not my actual engagement mug, because I think my husband would be angry.
Yes, I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
That's a lovely thing to do, though, isn't it? Where is the tree? Do you mind telling me? I know the Meadows quite well, so I wonder if I could imagine where it is.
So it's, if you are walking towards the Meadows from Quarter Mile, so you've got, I think, I always get the squares mixed up. It's either George Square or Bristow Square. I can never remember, but I think it's Bristow Square. Off to your left, you're walking to the Meadows in front of you. And I remember walking to the Meadows that day because it was my anniversary and I was in a good mood. And also because I was stopped by a Mormon preacher on the way. And they were like, can I talk to you about our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ? And then we walked back by this guy just after we got engaged. And I was just like, you're never going to believe this. I wasn't gay when you met me, but now I'm engaged to a man. Oh my God, this world, you should be worried.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
And you said, I thought you said more men.
So I went and found one and I'm just settled now. But the tree is, it's on one of the, there's like three pathways that extend from that entrance onto the meadows, and it's in the one in the center.
Right.
We have the exact location saved on a little Google map, so we always know exactly which one. And we did think about like carving our initials into it or stuff, but I think we won't do that. It's bad for the tree, and it's something that, you know, tacky straight people do.
Yeah, quite. You know where it is.
We know where it is.
Yeah. In fact, I think I stayed in a flat directly along that path at the end of it, opposite it.
Very likely. Yeah.
The last time I played Edinburgh.
Yes. Yeah. Very popular around there for fringe performers accommodation. Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely. How gorgeous. So now you live in Edinburgh.
I do, yes.
You're the one who moved. You showed the commitment.
Well, do you know what? I will play this part of the podcast back for him just in case he ever gets like, just remember which one of us moved. No, I did. I met him during my first fringe run that I was doing with someone who you've had on this show, Huge Davies. He and I did our first fringe run together. And despite how like difficult the fringe can be, I always loved Edinburgh. And because I met him and we would visit each other every couple of weekends, I formed a relationship with Edinburgh outside of the fringe and just really enjoyed it just as a city. And like, it's that kind of thing when performers, comedians come up here and go, oh, this town is actually so much nicer when the fringe isn't on. And it really is. And we looked at who it would be easier for to sort of make a move. And it was obviously me, because like a comedian, especially where I'm at now, I travel a lot for gigs, so it's sort of inconsequential where I'm based. Whereas he, his work is all sort of tied to things here in Scotland. Yeah. And he's got all of his family up here, and my family's all in Cornwall, so I'd already sort of moved away from them. So it's sort of six and half a dozen.
But Cornwall is a distance anyway, wherever you are.
Exactly. I'm already at a distance. So I was just like, why not extend? But no idea. I've lived here for the last 4 years and love it. Absolutely.
Yeah, of course, it still has all those wonderful pubs, still has all those wonderful restaurants and all those wonderful clubs.
Yeah.
And you can get a table.
And you can get a table. And you know, like all of the quirky little pubs in the alleyways, which I won't name, just in case anyone finds out about them. But cute little pubs that sort of only a few locals and some people know about. It's got all these lovely little spots that we've got a ton of memories together with now, which is just really lovely.
Gorgeous, yes. What a lovely story. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
And let's put the second mug with hashtag Free Britney on it into the time capsule. So what's the second thing you've chosen?
So the second thing is slightly less personal, but I think it's very reminiscent of sort of my childhood. And I tried to think of something from school that was like a really popular fad, because there was like all kinds of stuff when I was at school. There was like Pokemon cards, there was Pogs, you know, the little disc things that you'd find in crisps, and all kinds of trading cards and little games and stuff. But the thing that I've chosen to put in is a scented gel pen.
These don't know it.
Oh,
what is that?
They are, so I think because it was stationary and at school, one rule that everyone seemed to have in common was when you're in the younger classes, you wrote in pencil because you're not responsible enough to use a pen yet.
No.
They're permanent. You only use pens for fancy occasions. And when you did get to use a pen, it was only blue or black ballpoint. And that's it.
Who do you think you are, Dickens?
Yeah. Would you want a quill? And sometimes you get they were like orange handwriting pens with a weird little white nib, and they were blue or black as well. But every now and again, sometimes if you're doing something creative, for it was like the end of the week and you'd won your circle time so you could do whatever you like, and you wanted to do something a little bit creative, you'd be able to use some of your pens that normally weren't allowed to use. And if you had a scented gel pen, you were very popular. And I remember I got a pack of scented gel pens and I couldn't believe it. And the thing is, so gel pens, like, they were never used because they're usually like sparkly and like weird colors, like bright greens and oranges and stuff that you don't want in your workbook. But when you got to use them, you'd use them and you'd like just draw a shape, fill it in, and it would smell like something. So like, I think I had one that was like vanilla, one that was like ice cream. And we would go absolutely feral for them. If somebody had a scented gel pen, somebody like, oh, can I borrow it? And then you'd never see the pen again. And I remember in my school, I don't know what this says about me. Maybe it says that, you know, I was a young entrepreneur, but I took my pack of scented gel pens And in my playground at school, we had these three sort of like little Wendy houses. And one of them was set up like a little shop and you could go in and out and play in it and stuff. And we went into there at the start of lunch break. And we go in there, we get behind the counter and kids would line up and we would give them tattoos, but they were in the scented gel pens. So we just get their hand and draw something on their hand in the scented gel pens. And this is probably quite a bad thing, but as far as I'm aware, nobody was harmed. We would say, oh yeah, it's a scented gel pen. So if you want to, you can lick it and it will taste like the thing. So I draw an ice cream on somebody's hand and then they'd lick it and go like, that does taste like an ice cream, actually. This is great. And then the teachers are wondering, like, why has everyone come back from lunch and their mouths are like bright orange and green? What? Have your parents been giving you some kind of new yogurt or something that we don't know about? But I just remember that more than anything we really loved. And I think it was because, like, it felt kind of rebellious in a way because like we're so used to using all of the stationery that we were told we had to use to be like good kids. So when we got to use these, it was a bit like, are we like bad kids? Are we like really dangerous? I think just the aesthetic of them as well was just very reminiscent of the time. And I just like, even thinking about it now, I remember exactly how like the first gel pen I got, like it smelled, what color it was. It was sort of like a pale green. Absolutely loved them.
But you weren't an entrepreneur then. You didn't say, for 5p each, we can give you a tattoo.
I now realize definitely not an entrepreneur because I was giving them out for free. Ah. So that's actually quite a poor business model. But I wouldn't go far on The Apprentice with that.
No, I think that having said, I have no idea what these are. My granddaughter the other day was colouring things in. And she's autistic, so she tends to sniff everything. And she went, this yellow one smells of lemon. And I thought, that can't be right. And it did.
Yes.
So I wonder if, in fact, I own a scented
gel. You very well may do. You can still get them. I mean, a lot of comedians get like notebooks and pens and stuff. And sometimes you do it as like a bit of a treat. Mm-hmm. So I've had a good old browse of like most stationery shops pens. I know which pen I like. I know which ones are the good ones for writing quickly. So you very may have a scented gel pen in your possession and not know it. Don't lick it though. Don't lick it.
I'll do a tattoo. Yes.
Yeah.
So where in Cornwall was this?
So I grew up, so my hometown is Redruth. Right. It's not like a huge place. You can pretty much walk everywhere. Mm. But we were on an industrial estate. And I remember because the house that we used to live in was behind a ton of factories. And there was like a bacon slicing factory. There was a factory for, I don't know if you know, Rodder's Cornish clotted cream. Mm-hmm. And there was also a biscuit factory, which was the best one because on a warm day when they're doing like a hefty batch, the whole garden smell like freshly baked biscuits. And so maybe that's why like I chose scented gel pens, because maybe I associate sort of memories from my childhood with smells or like sensory experiences. But I remember you just stand in the back garden, especially on a nice spring bordering on summer day, and you just be like, they're doing shortbread today. And it was just like a lovely thing to just waft thing. Like, I feel bad for the people whose garden overlooked the baking slicing factory because we're like, oh, yeah, they're doing some hefty cuts today. Big waft of pork.
Pig but, again.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know. Yeah. I know we have a shared experience then because I grew up in Southeast London, but right next to the Peak Freen factory.
What's that?
It's a Peak Freen is a make of biscuit.
Oh, okay.
So, again, a biscuit factory, yeah.
Yes. And did you get the smells?
We did, yeah, exactly that thing. At school. How funny. There you are.
Yeah.
Well, happy memories. You've now led me down a path of sniffing pens. I mean, my wife catches me. I'm in big trouble.
Just say, a nice gay man told me to do it.
He told me it's fun.
Told me it's fun, yeah.
What else did he tell you was fun? Brilliant. Okay, Sam, so that's two things. And also, when you mentioned Huge Davies, who I love talking to, he's fantastic. We have another shared person from this podcast, Chloe Pett, who
of course
I adored.
Yes.
She is fantastic, isn't she?
Isn't she? I love her to pieces. Mm. Me, Chloe Hughes, and our friend Olga Koch, we all started comedy at the same time, same place in the basement of Soho Theatre. And we sort of formed a comedy quartet as well called Joy Multiplication. So every now and again, we'll put on a nice little show, the four of us, maybe with some guests as well. And we try out some new bits. And it's really just an excuse for the four of us to get together and have a little catch up. But yeah, we started comedy at the same time and we're still friends to this day, which I think is really lovely considering like we're all on to like different things. We're all traveling for gigs. I mean, I think Chloe and Olga are in Australia right now and he's just been in a TV show. I was just on my tour. So like, but we still connect. And I think that's really lovely considering like we've been at this for like the best part of a decade.
Yeah. And there's no reason why that shouldn't go right through your career, I think.
Well, one would hope. And I do say this despite the fact Chloe was on my podcast. She was the first guest on the podcast that I started quite recently. And in that podcast, she openly called me basic and thick. Because I used a word that was quite clever. I think I used the word porcine and I think I used it correctly. And she went, how did you know that? Because I think of you as quite a basic and thick person. And I unbelievably was just like, do you know what? I think you might be right. But it's just the kind of friendship that I guess that we will have together. I love those guys to pieces.
Yes, that's I've had a rosé. Let's talk about feelings.
Yes.
That's a nice idea.
It's lovely. It's nice because I try to make the guests feel comfortable. They pick a drink that they enjoy and we talk about like why that is their favorite drink and how it makes them feel. And then I get them to talk about a subject that they're already passionate about. And I try and ask them questions that go like, how does this thing that you're passionate about, how does that connect with your emotions, your feelings? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just really nice to have people on when they choose a topic that I know absolutely nothing about. And I just sort of get to sit there and I do get to be a little bit basic and thick, but I actually think that's a really important part of learning and developing as a person. Like I'm always very interested in what the person says. And I'm sort of not afraid to ask like what might be a stupid question, which normally people wouldn't be encouraged to ask. So I don't mind. If you listen to Ed Gamble's episode, he talked about pro wrestling and I rather spectacularly misquoted The Rock's catchphrase. I understand it's, can you smell what The Rock is cooking? And I thought his catchphrase was, are you cooking something? Which is a bit different.
Or can you smell The Rock?
Yes. Can you smell The Rock? Have you got rocks in the oven? But I really like it. And like, I feel like it puts guests in ease when you do stuff like that and you'd be like, no, I'm going to be the stupid one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll say the stupid things and then you talk with authority and enjoy that. And then I think you get a little bit more out of people when they're at that place of comfort. So
I mean, fundamentally, it is what I do on this because I don't know
absolutely
what they talk about. I often don't know what it is that they're talking about until they explain it to me. So yeah. I'm perfectly happy to be a bit slow and thick. And
exactly. If I tell you to go sniff a gel pen, you'll do it.
Oh, you betcha. Yeah. I'm doing it now.
Yes.
Okay, so let's move on to the next thing.
Sure.
What have we got for me? Okay, it's ad break time, so we have to leave you for a moment in case the money people want to play any ads to encourage you to part with some of yours. We'll be back when you're poorer.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome back. Bought anything? Probably for the best, although you could clearly do with some new jeans, Philip. Yes, I can see you. Still, let's get back to Sam Lake, the height of haute couture, and find out what else he would like to put in his time capsule.
So I've chosen a thing that I think I'm quite protective of. And again, it's a sensory thing, but this time more focused on taste. Mm. And that is the humble Cornish pasty. Mm. So maybe one, I'm not sure how we could like preserve it in the time capsule, maybe if it's like vacuum sealed or cryogenically frozen. But for as long as I can remember, I was a very fussy eater when I was a child. And I think every parent longs for the moment where their child discovers something that they're actually quite okay eating. Mm. And for me, well, as soon as I had a pasty, that was it. Like, I loved pasties. I saw them as a treat, a lovely treat. And I got like quite snobbish about pasties. Like, they had to come from a specific bakery. There was like another specialist bakery that I would also enjoy a pasty from. But then there were other pasty shops where I'd be like, don't ever bring me a pasty from there. If you're interested, I'm talking about WC Rose. I love their pasties. Mm. Anytime that I go down to Cornwall now, sometimes I do gigs in Falmouth, I'll pop into WC Rose and treat myself to a little pasty. If I've got friends with me and they've never been to Cornwall before, I'll take them to go get their first pasty. I'll do that thing when I heard that straight men with their girlfriends, when they make their girlfriend watch something like The Godfather or Star Wars for the first time, and they don't watch the film with them, they watch their partner and they look like, are you reacting to the same bits that I were reacting? Okay. So I go like, okay, so what do you think of the bake? How do you feel about the crimped crust? What do you think the ingredients are? Do you like the steak cut? No, there's no carrot in it. That's actually Swede. That's actually quite an offensive thing that you just said.
You racist.
You racist. Especially being on the road, a pasty is like quite a thing that you can get in like a lot of train stations, stations.
No. It's sad that really most people's experience of a Cornish pasty is the Cornish Pasty Company.
Exactly.
Which maybe they could well sue now, but it's a lot of pasties that are not pasties.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, they're pastry around something.
Yes.
But they're not a Cornish pasty.
They're not a Cornish pasty. And quite famously, I forget the year, but the term a traditional Cornish pasty is a protected term now. So
right.
If you want to call it a Cornish pasty, it has to be made in Cornwall to a specific specification. And then you can sell it from wherever, but you've got to ship it up from Cornwall. So it's got to be taken up in like a freezer van or something. And then
oh, so it's
there.
The British champagne.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. It's
they
exactly
can use
that
as an advertising slogan.
They really should. The pasty is the champagne of the enclosed foods world. And I have discovered a little bakery. I say a little bakery. I do think it is a chain. But there's a bakery here that does Cornish pasties. And I had one in maybe a week moment, and I had it and I thought, do you know what? For a pasty outside of Cornwall, quite far out of Cornwall, literally almost as far up the country as you can go, I went, that's not half bad. Had a good bake on it, wasn't too hot, wasn't too cold, got a lovely bit of like the gravy that comes out. You put like a little knob of butter in before you bake it, and then it sort of oozes out the crust and fuses a little bit to the baking parchment, and then it sort of leaves that on the base of the pasty. And that's actually a bit I quite enjoy. And it had all of those components. So I was like, you know what? This isn't bad. If I'm ever feeling homesick, I can go there. And that's a good one. That's not a bad pasty, that.
Nice.
But a Ginster's, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I'll only do traditional fillings as well. I won't do a cheese and onion pasty. I actually want to be sick at the thought. the times where like, as a kid, when we went to like a restaurant somewhere and there was a pasty on the menu, and I'd be like, well, I'll have a pasty, obviously. And then it comes to the table and it's a vegetable pasty. And I'd be like, why is there broccoli in my pasty? What is this? I'm so unhappy. This feels like a trap. It's just that I grew up with it and I look forward to when I find a pasty somewhere else in the country. And I go like, oh, okay, they've done it right here. Got a little connection to back home. This is a lovely little thing.
Show respect. Yes.
No sign of respect, yeah.
There's nothing nicer, of course. I mean, I like the meat in it.
Yeah.
There's nothing nicer than potato and pastry.
Say it again, please. It's I couldn't agree with you more. It's just, it's a really simple pleasure. Like, you don't need to overcomplicate, like, a nice baked good. A humble sausage roll, love it. You don't need to touch. You don't need to add anything to it. Just a bit of sausage in some pastry. Lovely. Yes. Lovely. I will say, in Scotland, you get some wild ones. You get macaroni pies. you get tatty dogs, which is just like a hot dog wrapped in sort of like a potato rosti thing. I don't mind them, but it's I don't think anyone's used this term to describe a pie before. Very avant-garde. Very avant-garde for the pastry world.
Yes. Well, in London, there's the invasion of the enchilada.
Yes. Yeah.
Which and looks similar to a pasty.
Yes. Yeah. Or do you mean an empanada?
Probably. What is an enchilada? Is that
I think an enchilada is in the tortillas, and I think you might sort of like bake them in the oven for a bit.
Yeah, so an empanada.
But an empanada, that's pastry with a filling.
Do you know when I said about me being completely happy to be stupid and thick? There you are.
There I am, seizing the moment. Thank you for doing that. But I am half Spanish, so I grew up with a lot of Spanish foods as well. So an empanada feels like the best of both worlds, to quote Miley Cyrus. And it's like, it's not quite the same crimping. It's a bit simpler. So an empanada is a little bit closer to sort of like a dumpling inside, right. You know, like a gyoza or something like that. But yeah, if you want sort of like more like a spicy, maybe a Latin American kind of pasty, an empanada, or a very good one. I had one just the other day, actually, in Borough Market when I was on tour. Had a lovely one. Very good.
Right, yeah. There's a stall just outside of Charing Cross Station. I might try it.
Oh, you should. You should. Give it a go. Yeah.
Yeah, be adventurous. That, while sniffing my pen, obviously.
Yes.
It's three lovely things so far. We've got two more to go in. One that you want to keep and one you want to bury and forget.
Yes, yes. So the fourth thing that I've chosen is a Game Boy Advance. So I'm a huge video games buff. I love video games. I don't play them as much in my adult life, and I think that happens to a lot of adults. You feel like you grow up, and video games are often seen as quite childish. So it seems like a weird thing to make time for. But I'm sort of at the moment trying to make time to enjoy video games again. Because sometimes when you think you're playing it, you start thinking about like, oh, well, I should have done all of this stuff today. I should have done some house chores. I should have done a bit of admin. I should have done some work. I'm trying to make time for playing. So video games have very much been on my mind. And I chose a Game Boy Advance because it's compact, it's portable. I think everyone remembers some form of a Game Boy growing up. I think lots of people think of sort of like the classic gray brick. And the cartridges that you put in the back and you play Tetris or Mario or Donkey Kong or something like that. And Game Boy Advance was like a big one for me because it was the first games console that I bought with my own money. I saved up my pocket. I say my own money. I paid for it with my pocket money. So very much like, okay, I paid for it with my own money. But I saved up, bought it myself. Arrived on the day and I was really excited. And what tends to happen with my old video games consoles is they become hand-me-downs to my younger brother. And so he's somewhere, I think, got this Game Boy Advance and like all of the consoles that I got after it. But I think I chose video games because I love video games, but also like, again, I associate a lot of personal experiences playing video games with my brother. With the Game Boys, they bring out lots of versions of the same thing. And I would get like one of each edition because I love them that much. And so the old one I'd give to my brother. And so then me and my brother both had one. And so we had a way to play games with each other. And I just remember maybe when he was around 3 or 4 and he had sort of learned enough about the world and video games and stuff that he could actually like play them properly. So before then, it was sort of like giving him the Game Boy and watching him just sort of like slap all of the buttons on it. And we'd have a little giggle being like, oh, he's trying. Look at him. He's playing a game. And then I remember the first time that like he actually like beat me playing something. And I was like, oh, this is a dark day in this household. But I just remember like watching him grow up and then seeing the video games get more advanced as we grew up together. And being able to enjoy them together. And we'd get games that are intended to be played by two people and like play them cooperatively.
I watch my grandchildren wander around Roblox together on yes. two different consoles and just yeah. saying, oh, you're over there. And that's extraordinary.
Yeah. Roblox is huge. And I think we're now, because my brother and I are in different generations, he's 12 years younger than me. There are things now that he understands very quickly and I have no idea what he's talking about. So like Roblox, Fortnite, Minecraft, I have no idea about any of those things. But there are games that we played as kids and then when the new versions come out now, we sort of like make a point of getting them together and then like setting an evening aside so that we can like open up a Zoom call and chat to each other as we play this game together. And it's just like a lovely experience. I think video games get a bad rap sometimes of encouraging poor behaviors in younger people. And I actually think like video games for me have been nothing but fun and wholesome and a way to connect with people. And I wish there were more stories about that side of video games and how they bring people together.
Yes, that whole world of playing together is extraordinary, isn't it? But also,
yeah.
I think sometimes the thing of being solitary, of sitting and almost turning your brain off for a bit.
Yes,
it's yeah. a good thing to do.
It's a good thing. You can get video games that do sort of all of the above. You know, there's games that are simulators for things that you can do in real life, like running your own farm, or I think there's one where you pretend to be a goat. I'm not sure about that one. It's literally called Goat Simulator. But there's video games for every sort of like mood and things. Like there are games, like you say, where like I want something peaceful, maybe a story game with a narrative or something where... like the video game equivalent of one of those Zen gardens that you get where you sort yeah. of brush the sand, you know, something quite calming.
There's... in order to get the clue, you have to clear the leaves.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A repetitive thing that you have yeah. to do for a couple of minutes. And it's quite calming, isn't it?
It's very calming. And I think, yeah, just like a lot of other forms of media, video games are designed to make you feel certain things or to enable you to have different types of experience based on what you feel like having that day. And that's always what they've been for me. If for friends who don't play video games, I always go like, I know exactly what video game you would love. I know what game to give you to get you into video games. And I love pairing people up with that kind of stuff. Just love them.
And do you know that because, you know, people say, oh, do you want to talk to Sam Lake? And I go, yeah, let's look up Sam Lake. And look up Sam Lake. And I went straight to a person who plays a character in a video game.
Don't. So this man has almost ruined my life. So he's very good. I have nothing personal against him. But he is a Finnish man called Sam Lake. And he wrote the story of and like designed several very successful video games. And the most recent one came out not long ago. It was called Alan Wake 2. And even I have to say it was very good. But sometimes I'll finish a gig and I'll do the classic thing of looking at my phone and my socials to see if anyone from the gig followed me or if anyone said anything about me. And sometimes I'll be like, oh, all right, nothing much there. And then I will sometimes see the other Sam Lake get a tweet or a thread or something that says like, absolutely loved Sam Lake on the show tonight. And I'll be like, you've got the wrong Sam Lake. And I can't help but feel that maybe the invite for Live at the Apollo has maybe gone to the wrong Sam Lake. I don't know. Because genuinely,
clearly,
people go to my website. You can contact me on there. I get messages from people that say like, hi, I have a question about your most recent video game. Could I ask about accessibility options? And I'd be like, you want the other Sam Lake. It's also happened where somebody's making a poster for a gig that I'm on and they're putting all of the acts on it on the lineup so you can see who's on and they'll use a photo of the other Sam Lake.
No!
Sometimes he'll get tagged in the thing. And one time he actually replied, we had a little back and forth. It was a charity gig I was doing in Walthamstow and they tagged the other Sam Lake. And he replied saying like, I can't help but feel that for a gig in London, you didn't mean this video games designer in Finland. No, maybe you mean someone else.
I think my routine's interesting, but I don't think it'll get many laughs.
Yeah. He was just like, I really hope you don't want me to do this because I have nothing prepared. But yeah, so it does happen a lot. Sometimes on like clips and stuff, people go like, that's not Sam Lake. He looks nothing like Sam Lake. And I'd be like, the other Sam Lake, his name's not even Sam Lake. He changed it to sound cooler. And I was like, I was born with this name.
I was born cool.
I was born the original Lake. But yeah.
He's more of a pond,
a shallow pond, if I do say so.
Very much so. Well, how lovely. I love the fact that also mostly that those games make you think of your brother and playing with your brother. That's really
Yeah. And I think because I'm the big brother, so I'm quite protective of him. So I do always I'm always checking in every couple of days, see how he's okay. We're always chatting. Sometimes it's nice to just be like, should we make an evening, just do something fun? Especially because we live so far apart, because he's still in Cornwall. It is nice to be able to do something this across such a great distance and do something fun that we both enjoy. So like I say, it's a really lovely way to connect with people.
Yes, it is. I just hope my younger brother isn't listening to this. there we are. So we've just got the one thing left, Sam, that you want to put in that you'd like to bury and never think of again.
Yes. So this is, I'll tell the story, and I think you'll agree once I've told you the story, I've been very brave and honest about this. The thing that I'd like to bury, that I'd like to forget about, is an autograph. So when I was six, me, my mum and my dad and my auntie, we went on a holiday to Disneyland. What a dream for a six-year-old kid. Got to go to Disneyland. It was so cool. Went to Orlando, Florida. And it was a lovely holiday. And got to see all these cool things. And one of the things that you do at Disneyland is you get a little autograph book. And you go and meet all of the characters at Disneyland. And so I was getting all of the autographs from people I had, like Winnie the Pooh, Buzz, Woody. I was getting all their autographs and writing them in. And I have a photo somewhere, I think it's on my computer somewhere. It's this photo of me next to the guy who was playing Willy Wonka. And he was playing the Gene Wilder version of Willy Wonka. So, you know, he's got the big purple coat and the top hat and started to look like him. And I loved that film. And so when I got to meet him, and because I'm 6 years old, there's still a part of me that thinks maybe it's the real him. I have this photo of me and Willy Wonka, and there's some other kids in the background sort of looking a bit oh, what's going on over there? And it's because in this photo, Willy Wonka, guy playing Willy Wonka, took off his big purple coat, which we all thought was really cool, and he let me wear it. Oh. And so I've got this photo of me wearing Willy Wonka's coat.
Great.
And I would look at this photo and go what a cool day. And I bet all of those kids were looking at me because they didn't get to wear his coat. I am such a legend. And it's a really fun photo. And I think my mum is next to me as well. And so it's a lovely little photo. And I was looking at it. I don't know if you've ever had this where you suddenly remember what actually happened on the day when you look at a photo. Because I would casually glance at this and go I was a legend wearing the coat. Look at that. Look at me go. You can hardly, and I'm so short as well. It looks like I'm wearing I'm completely covered by it. And then I remembered why he let me wear the big purple coat. And it's because I had shat myself. So when we went to Disneyland, my dad, who runs pubs for a living, he really liked going to all of the Irish pubs, which there were a lot of Irish pubs there. And one of the things that you could do is you could get a yard of ale, and it comes in this really tall, fun looking glass. And as a 6 year old, I would look at that and go I want my drink in a big fun glass as well. And they were no, he's having a beer. You can't have a beer. That we can't give a 6 year old beer, even in America. And one day, a waitress had the incredible idea of saying, we can give him the same glass, but we just won't put beer in it. What if we put apple juice in it? And we would get a yard of ale at every Irish pub. So at some point, I would have had at least 6 yards of apple juice. And I don't need to tell anyone what that does to the human body. Mm-hmm. And so that morning, disaster. I got rushed to a changing room with my mum and my auntie, and they were no, he's really done a number on himself here. I don't know what we're going to do.
Burn it all.
Yes. Yeah. So my auntie had to run to the gift shop, and the only thing that she could find, because they didn't have anything in kids' sizes, was a big oversized sweatshirt. So I was walking around with a big sweatshirt that sort of stopped just above my ankles. So I was a little boy just running around completely nude underneath, just wearing a big sweatshirt. But it happened early in the day, so my family's we're not wasting the tickets. I'm not taking him back to the hotel now. He's going to make the most of this. So we went to all the rides and we got to meet all of the people. So when it got to Willy Wonka, I walked over to him and he could see I'm just wearing a big sweatshirt. And he was like, why is this little boy only wearing a sweatshirt? And my mum and my auntie were just going like, you don't want to know. Don't ask the question. Don't worry about it. And he didn't want like an embarrassing photo of me to be taken. So very sweetly gave me the big purple jacket. And so I wore that. But now that memory is tainted, remembering why I got given the purple coat.
And all the kids at the back are looking at you saying, that's the kid who shat himself.
That's the kid who shat himself. We all saw it.
Yeah.
We all saw it.
We all heard it.
Oh, God. Yeah, probably. It was a 4D experience. I feel like I've just told quite like well-meaning stories of like, here's how these lovely small things make me think about like nice relationships in my life. And then like, here's a big old story of me shitting myself at Disneyland. Sorry to bring the tone down.
No, no. But Willy Wonka, appropriately named then.
There's a joke that's coming to mind and I'm not going to make it. I'll let the listeners do that for themselves.
It's Disney. We can't take that any further.
You've got a reputation to uphold.
Oh, you poor little boy. Well, of course, at the time, you would have gone, that's all right, these things happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's only later in life that you look back and go, oh, that poor little boy.
Yeah.
But you weren't. You were happy and you met Willy Wonka.
I met Willy Wonka. No. And I didn't think anything of just walking around in a breezy sweatshirt with nothing underneath.
And still don't, I understand.
No. I'm very European, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Sam, I'm going to bury that for you, but how lovely to meet you. How lovely to talk to you.
I've had a lovely time, yes.
Good. I'm sure that your career is going to continue to soar.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, when you speak to Chloe, say I'm still waiting for that night of karaoke that we're going to do together.
Oh, you two enjoy that and I'll be nowhere near it.
You have been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my lovely guest, Sam Lake. Hopefully he's now persuaded you to see him on tour and at Edinburgh if you're visiting. The link is still in the description if you fancy it. As far as My Time Capsule is concerned, do rate or review us and feel free to subscribe to this podcast on the podcast provider of your choice. Or you can subscribe to Acast Plus to get this pod ad-free and with a weekly bonus episode. Link in the same place as Sam's link. It's all getting rather complicated, isn't it? So I won't add to that. I'll just tell you that the theme tune was written by Pass the Peas Music and is available on Spotify. And you can get in touch with me or my producer, John, via social media or this email address, mytimecapsulepodcast@gmail.com. Yes, I do sing it sometimes. This was a cast-off production, but certainly not tossed off. Oh, no. John, my son, and therefore Fenton Stevens, took enormous care over it. So I hope his gentle manipulation gave you enormous pleasure. Right, see you soon. Until then, I'll leave you with a question from our last guest, Ainsley Harriott, one that was asked of one of our listeners, Julian, in the foyer of the BBC some years ago, which he told me about on Twitter. The question was, which are the three football teams with swear words in the name? Any ideas? Well, the first one is fairly obvious. It's Arsenal, of course. And then there's Scunthorpe. Think about it. Yep, you've got it. And of course, finally, as they're always called in my house, Manchester fucking City. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.